Recently, several stories in the national press have reported on the potential harm caused by blue light emitted from the screens of smartphones, tablets, and computers. This allegedly causes harm ranging from long-term damage and associations with macular degeneration to disrupted sleep cycles. Whilst media sensationalism in health stories is nothing new, it inevitably brings with it an influx of patient queries and requests for advice. Here, David Thompson clarifies the science behind the claims with Professor Stephen Dane from the University of New South Wales in Australia.
Stephen, welcome from Australia. You might be on the other side of the world, but I suspect that you've had similar media reports about the hazards of blue light and the purported risks from new lamp types and various computer displays. There seem to be two components to this. The first is the potential for short wavelength light to damage various structures in the eye, the lens and the macula in particular. The second is the potential of blue light to disturb circadian rhythms and sleep patterns. So can we separate those two out and deal with the question of damage first? Could you briefly outline what structures in the eye are susceptible to light damage and why blue light in particular is problematic?
Yes, hello, David, and I'm glad to be here. We've had the reports in the media here, perhaps more in the optical media rather than in the popular media, and usually associated with a product promotion. And yes, there are two components, and they are frequently intertwined and confused, and they are in reality very different. Short wavelength light is certainly damaging to the retina. As early as 1971, Haworth and Sperling reported a monkey which they'd raised in intense blue light, and it was functionally tritonopic and had a proportion of its cones damaged when they looked at it histologically. In the short term, there's no doubt that blue light is harmful. Blue light's not absorbed in the cornea or in the vitreous, so these structures are not at risk. In the same reverse logic, the cornea and lens absorb ultraviolet, so it doesn't reach the retina, or it reaches it in very small quantities. There's an observation that sunlight exposure has been linked to age-related macular degeneration, and this has led people to assume that it's blue light that's the culprit. And this assumption has yet to be confirmed epidemiologically, and it remains just as likely that the small amount of ultraviolet, especially in childhood, is in fact the issue. The issue with circadian rhythms is strictly not blue. The peak effect is actually at about 490 nanometers, which is blue-green. And for millions of years, animals have been irradiated with light that changes colour as a function of daytime, so that the what are called intrinsically photosensitive retinal ganglion cells respond and control circadian rhythms. Their photopigment is melanopsin. They project to non-visual areas, and they're, as I said, implicated in circadian rhythms. So that's a blue-green rather than a blue problem. And it's also not an issue of protection. It's if you want to downregulate melatonin and stay awake, then you want lots of blue light. If you want to upregulate melatonin and you want to go to sleep, then you don't want blue light. You want kind of yellow, perhaps incandescent, perhaps candlelight even. It's also related to something that's much more of a problem in your part of the world, and that's the seasonal affective disorder, so that light, and particularly blue light, can be used as therapy in those cases. So, yes, blue light is damaging. Blue-green light regulates our wakefulness and our sleepiness.
Presumably, short wavelength light is more damaging because the photons have more energy. On this basis, UV light is the most damaging, but we can largely discount it because it's filtered out by the lens and the cornea. Blue light, on the other hand, is transmitted by the cornea and lens, and so has more potential to damage the retina. Is that correct?
That's true. All the epidemiological associations have been between daylight and age-related macular degeneration. But they haven't been able to tease out whether that is specifically blue light. And it may well be the ultraviolet getting there in very small quantities. So that it is certainly an assumption based on the fact that the shorter the wavelength, the more energy in any quantum, and therefore the potentially more damaging that the irradiation is.
Presumably the main source of high-intensity short-wavelength light is sunlight. But what about artificial light sources such as lamps and computer screens, tablet screens, smartphone screens? Do they emit light in the sort of quantities that could be dangerous?
The kind of number one blue light enemy is certainly direct sun viewing, and that's viewing eclipses. In my book, number two is viewing welding arcs unprotected. You can damage the retina from direct viewing the sun in a few seconds. You can damage the retina, or you reach the industrial safety limits viewing welding arcs between 3 and 12 seconds. Number three, just for the optometrist to put it in context, number three are the ophthalmic instruments, where you can reach the occupational safety limit for blue light in about 3 minutes. I made some measurements earlier this year, and these are obviously Australian conditions, and I looked at the blue light content. And the worst case that I could find outside in a noonday Sydney sun was that you needed about 10 days viewing to reach the industrial safety limits, and that would be 24/7 at noon levels. It's an unrealistic thing that can happen. With the screens, they included computer screens, of which were cathode ray tubes, LEDs, cold cathodes, and I also included some smartphones. The worst case I could find, full brightness for a phone, was that you needed 234 days of exposure, 24/7. And the worst case for a computer, again, turned out to maximum brightness, was that you needed 314 days to reach the occupational safety limits. So it gives you a sense of the dose that you get from a computer screen or from a smartphone relative to the dose that you get out in the natural environment. And they are remarkably low.
Are the effects cumulative? Lots of people now spend long periods of time looking at computer screens, smartphone screens, etc. Over a number of years, are they likely to reach some critical level where damage might occur?
There are damage processes going on. There are also repair processes. And the problem occurs when the damage processes overwhelm the repair processes. And all of the occupational safety limits stop at the most at 8 hours. And the idea is that you've got 8 hours of possible damage and you've then got 16 hours of repair. In fact, the blue light, you stop counting, you stop calculating at 10,000 seconds. And if you would say something that is well below anything that's known to produce an effect, could it be cumulative over a period of time? I mean, the short answer is we don't know, but I think you'd say it is highly, highly unlikely.
So what general advice would you give a patient in relation to protecting their eyes from light, blue light in particular? Obviously, it's a good idea to recommend the use of sunglasses, particularly under conditions where blue ultraviolet light levels are high. But in a sort of domestic office environment, is there any need, do you feel, to be recommending filters and things to put over the screen to reduce the blue light that the eyes are exposed to?
My first advice in avoiding age-related macular degeneration is to give up smoking. It remains by far the greatest risk factor. The second one is to maintain a good diet, which includes leafy green vegetables. My next piece of advice was do not view the sun unprotected, and you have in your European Standard 1836 specifications for filters. Don't view welding arcs unprotected. Follow the safety instructions and protection for lasers. In the natural environment, it seems unnecessary, and all the calculations I've ever seen is that it's, and even the British standard many years ago had a requirement on blue light transmittance, but it wasn't a restrictive. It simply meant that if you couldn't reduce the visible transmission too much without also including the blue. So it was not that you needed to reduce the blue, it was you didn't want to relatively increase the blue by too much. Even a grey pair of sunglasses, typical pair of sunglasses, reduces the blue dose to about 20% of its original level. If I had any advice over sunglasses, I would say to avoid very blue tints. Highly blue-absorbing sunglasses, the so-called blue-blocking sunglasses, can affect detection and recognition of signals and lights, so that there is a downside to wearing those kinds of sunglasses. As far as the office environment is concerned, I rate this along with the requirements or the claims many years ago that we needed ultraviolet protection against computers. Yes, they do emit blue light. Yes, they do emit ultraviolet, but it's in such small quantities that I really can't see the need for any protection or any concern whatsoever. In passing, I'd like to make a comment about the word blue blocking. It's been used both for intraocular lenses and for spectacle lenses. Blue blocking, for those certainly who work in the sunglass area, is interpreted as something like 100% rejection of blue. These intraocular lenses and spectacle lenses, which are blue blocking, actually only block about 15, perhaps 20% of the blue light, so they don't block all of it. As such, they're not having a large effect on colour perception and things like that. So I think they're fairly innocuous in terms of any downside other than the cost to the patient.
And finally, the display technology, of course, never stands still. And there seems to be a number of new display technologies emerging, in particular the sort of wearable displays such as Google Glass. Do you foresee any particular problems in relation to the eyes with these new technologies?
Mainly screens these days are liquid crystal displays, and they are backlit. The liquid crystal function itself is not significant. It's the backlighting which is significant. We've moved from cold cathode backlighting, which has a fairly spiky emission spectrum but goes through the whole spectrum, through to white LEDs. And the white LED has a very prominent blue peak and then has a broader peak in the kind of the yellow-green through to the red, which is the emission of the phosphor. So the LED works by stimulating the phosphor from a blue or a violet LED. And it's the similarity of that blue peak to the blue hazard function that people have been remarking on. As far as the blue hazard is concerned, whenever two light sources look the same, they must be stimulating the red, green, and blue cones equally. So the dose to the blue cone is the same when two sources are the same colour. So how you produce it, the technology you use to produce that colour, is actually totally irrelevant. I have done some measurements, particularly on the three-colour LED, the OLED displays of some smartphones, and the indication there is that the dose may be slightly higher, but we're talking about 10-15%. On the other hand, plasma screens, the dose is slightly lower. But I'm not sure where we're likely to go beyond LCDs other than to OLEDs. And at the moment, the OLEDs have got some problems of screen burn-in. That is, they tend to retain the image. And they also tend to lose their brightness with time. But I guess that's probably the next way to go. And I don't see anything additional as a problem in those compared with LED backlit liquid crystals.
I guess the concern with some of the wearable technology is that physically the screen is closer to the eye or projected onto the retina. But from what you're saying, that really is of no relevance. It's the retinal illuminance, effectively, that's the important factor.
That's right. For two screens that are the same, effectively the same luminance, in other words, what's arriving at the retina is the same, then the effect is going to be exactly the same. The fact that you've placed it closer is not particularly relevant. If the emissions were hazardous to the cornea, then that would be an important effect.
Professor Dane, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Stephen and David.